The second birth is, in reality, the death of the lower nature. When it occurs, the rational part reawakens, and rising triumphant from its rational sheath, mingles itself with the victorious and illumined aeons. At the first birth, the self dies out of eternity and enters into the illusion of time. At the second birth, the self ascends out of the illusion of time and diffuses its being throughout the substances of eternity. Everything that is born into material existence passes from a greater to a lesser state. After the elementary birth, which is the immersion of the rational soul into the irrational universe, the soul enters upon what is called the cycle of necessity. The cycle of necessity is simply the will of births and deaths. During this cycle, the temporarily individualized soul passes from one condition of unreality to another. The intervals between these conditions are the lesser births and deaths which take place within the world egg. There is first the birth into the great egg, then the cycles of birth and death within the egg, referred to as reincarnation or metempsychosis, and finally the philosophic death out of the irrational nature forever. At the time of the philosophic death, which is also the second birth, the soul escapes from matter forever, and having pierced through the hypothetical wall of existence, returns to the ever-enduring state of the absolute. By way of discretion, let us consider a little more in detail the subject of reincarnation. There is a popular misconception concerning the continuity of identity throughout the cycle of incarnations. People are heard to say, "I wish I knew who I was in my last incarnation," or "I think I must have been a Hindu in my last life." According to the most profound SYS terms of thought, the so-called personalities which come forth out of the silent watcher are all pendant from this single cause but are not directly related to each other. Among the potentialities of the self is the power of projecting a host of individualities into temporary existence. After existing their appointed span, these individualities are reabsorbed into the self from whose essences they were originally differentiated. Thus the spiritual causal nature of man is capable of objectifying periodically a chain of personalities, each a separate and individual creation endowed with separate and individual faculties. For example, John Doe is a personality, being objectified from an impersonal and transcendental nature, itself neither personal nor individual. When John Doe has finished the span of his physical existence, he is absorbed back into his own spiritual causal nature, which is not John Doe nor does it know John Doe, but which is an all-pervading superphysical life. When John Doe has been returned to this universal state, he simply ceases to exist. He will never reincarnate again, nor will his characteristics and traits be perpetuated. The universe will never again know of John Doe. After a period of inaction, however, the spiritual causal nature which gave John Doe being will create a new personality. This personality will neither remember John Doe nor associate its life in any way with that of John Doe, and yet certain qualities will be manifest in the new personality which could not have come into expression had they not passed through certain definite stages of growth while in the personality of John Doe. Therefore, the incarnating individuality of one incarnation never incarnates again, but out of the spiritual origin in which this incarnating life was individualized, new individualized lives will be formed which will come into manifestation, and then in turn vanish. Thus the self gives birth to an infinite number of personalities, but it is the self, not the personalities, that endures. This self does not actually incarnate or reincarnate, but from itself it individualizes incarnating organisms. Consider for a moment the diagram at the beginning of this chapter. The large circle represents the egg of existence, the cosmic sphere, or aura, of the demiurgus, whose outer circumference is termed the ring pass knot, or the extremity of manifestation. The line descending and piercing the wall of the great egg is consciousness emerging from the self and merging into the substances of the egg. The point where the descending line breaks the wall of the circle and enters into the limitation of existence is the first birth, the true philosophic death, for the egg is the sepulcher in which consciousness is buried. Having penetrated the wall of the egg, the line of consciousness begins the spiral path of the will of necessity. This spiral path is made up of lives and deaths, which are termed incarnations. At last, having through philosophy learned of the true mystery of existence, the consciousness breaks through the wall in the second death, or philosophic birth, and reascends to the sphere of universal consciousness, which is its true dwelling place. It will thus be seen that while the Buddhist theory differs in minor details from the philosophic atheism of the Greeks, its essential nature is the same. In Buddhism, which, as you know, considers deity only in the form of self, or absolute existence, and has no concept of a personal God, reincarnations occur within the lower spheres of the egg of being, those spheres being considered as the ground wherein is set up the will of necessity. Accordingly, one great Buddhist philosopher is declared to have said, "Of births and deaths there are a countless number, but one great death and one great birth is the measure of accomplishment. Thus are differentiated the greater and the lesser cycles. By divine prerogative, by the impulses controlled by law, which is the habit of space, life is periodically immersed in creation, where it continues its spiral progress in the smaller cycle until finally it escapes through the wall of being and finds perfection in its own source. Thus we have physical existence contrasted with divine existence. The physical birth and death of man is a minor mystery. As sleep is a little death, so birth and death are miniature cycles of existence, but the great death and the great birth are the supreme cycle of existence and the grand mystery of life. Although its physical nature is alone susceptible of analysis, there is within each so-called material creature a spiritual, or superphysical, part. Whether we term it spirit, soul, higher mind, or consciousness, it is that something within the shell of matter which is superior to and must eventually become master of the irrational universe. The only reason that this higher part is confined within the lower world is that man as an individual neither appreciates this inner strength nor understands how to directionalize it in order that it may achieve liberation and carry with it to perfection the lesser parts which arc under its domination. The rational soul, or spiritual life of man, has a higher origin, and is predestined to attain a far more noble end than is appreciable to the mortal mind with its limited comprehension. Now comes a legitimate question: just how can man escape from the crystal ball of matter with its limiting materializing agencies and return to the Dawn Land from which he originally came? Liberation is to be attained most simply, according to the Eastern school, through the projection of consciousness. We have already intimated that man lives upon the level of his thoughts. The universe that is real to him is simply that world with which his thinking has attuned him. When man causes his consciousness to accept the reality of the illusionary universe, he is swallowed up in the illusions he has thus affirmed. the moment consciousness rises above the level of illusion, man is freed from its limiting influences. Man is composed of three major parts, a divine part which may be correlated to the dot of primitive symbolism, a super human part correlated to the line, and a human or natural part correlated to the circle. When he lives upon the level of the he inferior creator and its regent 91. 92 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY. Physical plane and is controlled by his physical propensities. Man is necessarily en rapport with the physical universe and subject to the inconsistencies and incongruities of matter. When he lifts his consciousness above material things and lives in the world of his higher mind, man then dwells in the intellectual sphere. This is a much broader vista but still is limited to certain fallacies of thinking, for even the higher mind with its magnificent grasp of the problems of lower existence is necessarily imperfect and to a great degree immersed in the maya of physical existence. When ultimately he lifts his consciousness above mind and thought to spiritual realization, man then lifts his entire nature from the intellectual to the spiritual world. The consummation of this elevation is the goal of human effort, and here and there among the elect of the earth one, like the great Buddha, achieves to perfect realization and absolute liberation. The path of liberation, however, is too difficult for the majority to travel, for few will give up the lesser self with its likes and dislikes in exchange for an abstract reality which has neither desire nor feeling but which dwells in unbroken contemplation throughout eternity. The world in which we live is simply the sphere wherein we have centered our activities. The higher our ideals, the higher arc our activities, and consequently the higher is our world. Selfishness is the key to the inferno, for the inferno, or inferior universe, is ruled by selfishness. The physical world is that sphere controlled and directionalized by selfish urges. And every soul that is selfish is bound to the physical universe. Qualities within us bind us to forces outside which are like those qualities. As long as selfishness endures within our own souls, it holds us to the sphere of selfishness without. As we transmute qualities within our own natures, we ascend into new worlds of corresponding consciousness outside. Man is held by his materiality to the material sphere, by his intellectuality to the intellectual sphere, by his ideality to the ideal sphere. But regardless of his own viewpoints or activities, man is eternally bound by his innate reality to the absolute, which is the fullness of reality. When he has extricated